it feels like I've been off for like 6 months, but it's only been three. This is the Council Connection. I'm your host, Fabian Vicks, and I am coming to you live from winter break. I'll talk about what I've done so far semester two and going forward for the rest of the semester and things going on this time of the year, which is contracts and decision making. But of course, this is part of the show. I say, let's go.
Like it's common sense. Got a monkey on my feet like it's common sense. Got gorillas in the streets like it's common sense. Stack the money heads up like it's second nature. Got a stay pulled up like it's second nature. Keep a chip in my hair like it's second nature. Big Wunda make me step like second nature.
I just want to take this time out before we get to my semester two thoughts. Some things that have been going on for this semester for me. I think it was during National School Counselor Week, February 8th. A lot of counselors recognized for their contribution to Henry County and to the counselor profession. A lot of counselors recognized for things they were doing, and I'm so happy for everybody. And some reason why they gave me recognition. I'm trying to figure out why. And I got a invitation from them on the 23rd of January. I knew it was Council of the Year because I didn't apply for it. I didn't feel like I had the metrics to even get recognized as a semifinalist. So I knew it was a Council of the Year unless somebody put my name in the hat and applied for me, which I don't think they would have because somebody reached out for doubt. So I knew it wasn't that. So for the last couple years, I presented at GSCA and ASCA. And I was truly taken aback when I got recognized for presenting at the state conference and at the national conference. And I was honored. I was happy. I was having some imposter syndrome, to be honest with you, because I'm like, I'm just doing my job. Why are they recognizing for it? And if you think about it, when you look at the things that we do it for the job, we do it for the kids, do it for the best, the betterment of our buildings. And we know the things that we do, but do people actually see the things that we do? Do people recognize what we've done? Do we get taken for granted in our buildings? Do we get taken for granted in our districts? Do we get taken for granted in our profession? Education, by parents. We do a lot of things as school counselors that people don't see. People just see the schedule or see the kids together or whatnot. But do they see us in what we actually do? Do they see the role of counselors today versus the role of counselors 10 years ago? I can't believe I'm about to hit 10 years as a school counselor in 2 years. Do they see us as see counselors different versus 20 years ago, 30 years ago, even 35, 40 years ago when you're dealing with vocation and guidance? Do they see the different things that we orchestrate or we collaborate with? Do they see those various things? I just find it amazing that school counselor, one of the most adaptable, progressive positions that we have now. And I'm appreciative of the role that I have as a school counselor, and I'm appreciative of being honored in my county as far as the work that I've done to help grow counselors. And that's the reason why I do my podcast. I do this podcast to help. I don't expect to help every counselor in America or the world. Just the ones that need a little laugh or need a slight nudge into making sure that, is this the right profession for them? Am I doing the right thing? Or how to do this? Or what can we do? I know that's not my final thought, because of my final thought, I forgot to mention my cold open. I had some final thoughts on the Cat Williams interview heard around the world, and you'll hear that in a minute, in a little while. Not a minute, because you might think 60 seconds. No, you got to get through most podcasts to get to that part. But this year especially, I thought last year was tough because being moved to a different grade level. I'll get my thoughts on that on another show. I felt like during the year, I'm questioning my why. Why am I questioning my why being a counselor? Is my why good enough? Am I good enough to deserve to have a why? Did I want to continue to do school counseling? And I questioned that because of how I was feeling, and that's some of the after effects of dealing with depression and dealing with anxiety and imposter syndrome, a lot of different things. And right now I've come to the conclusion that I think I'm figuring out my why was not compromised. I was compromised due to being jaded and being depressed, being sad, being withdrawn. So many different levels of things I could talk about, and I'm going to, like I said, I'm coming back with a vengeance this semester as far as things I want to talk about on my show and how I dealt with them. I know this is not a therapy session, but this is part of making sure if somebody's dealing with the same things that I'm dealing with, I can hopefully help that person get through those things. I know I dealt with offer. I'm talking about winning an award to depression. That's a great segue, I know. But just wanted to show you that there are things that really changed me as my look as a counselor, as far as how I look at education differently. I've know that I think outside the box, and you have to. Education is not cookie cutter. You don't get the same shape cookie. And you might not get all the same chocolate chips and the same walnuts on a cookie that you might get on this side of town versus what you might get on this side of town, versus where you might get in the north part of town versus where you might get in the south central part of the state, like a rural area or urban area, or a county that's so small that you have a K-12 building. So counseling is not cookie cutter as far as the building. The expectations are not cookie cutter. Ask us cookie cutter, this is what we want. This is what the expectation is, 80-20. Your ratios have went down in a lot of states as far as a collaboration of all states. Some states might be the same. Some districts might have where your caseload is 491, which is Georgia right now, which is still extremely high. My building, we have 1,120 students. We have 3 counselors. There is no way on this red, white, and blue earth, can't use the words I want to use, but that we can see 400 students every day. My eighth grade counselor got 430 students on her hallway. Which goes back to, we need to have a true conversation as far as staffing and make sure the buildings are, they shouldn't be Title I. Should Title I be involved? If you are Title I, where those spaces are going to go for those entities? A lot of different things can happen. So that's a whole other conversation for another day as far as school council leadership and how you looked at as a leader in administrative decisions. That's another conversation. But with that being said, I'll be right back with my thoughts on my semester two and things going forward. Be right back. So last time we spoke, we had Gabrielle Brundage from Savannah, Chatham County, who was the Georgia School Council of the Year and Madam President-elect of the GSCA. If you just now listen to my podcast, of course, you know I'm from Georgia. So that's where we left off at, and we took a break. We usually take a break from, I take a break from the show because I'm the host and production and director and all that stuff. Took a break. I was going to come back in January, and I said, you know what, let me just make sure I just take a little bit more time. And what has been going on the last couple months, of course, I'll be presenting at ASCA for third straight year. It's going to be one of those quick sessions. That's the content I'm going to be talking about is promoting your school council program. It's going to be one of those mini sessions, like 20 minutes, so get in and get out. Tell the truth, I haven't started working on it yet because it's February. But I know they probably want some stuff on the platform in May, so I'll start working on that within the next few weeks. Make it engaging for everybody, so that way we have way things to take into the 24-25 school year. And wow, we're already looking at 24-25. We're not even finished with 23-24. But you know, that's how it goes when you look at your life as a school council, an administrator, or a district leader. You always look at the next school year starting January. Really, sometimes you need to start looking at December with staff that might be coming back, might not be coming back. So as far as things to look forward to in semester two for those counselors who are just starting or those who are switching buildings, the first thing you need to look at is your data from semester one. Has your program impacted student success to where you're at right now? As far as me, one of my goals was to lower the number of students that are failing four or more classes that are not in the REP class. Right now, when I started my small group, I had 12 students. One had to take out the end of semester one because they were an ESOL student, which brings it to 11. And once I saw the student, those scholars' grades, I've dropped it down by 4 students. So about 33% was the decrease of students failing 4 more classes after when I started a small group all the way to end of semester one. That's a good decrease. Of course, we want to get 50 or we want to get all the students off, but any impact we have on students improving is a win. And for my small group, I look at it as for my grade level, 7th grade course, I'm looking at those students, and 90% of those students were on the same team and they're all in the same homeroom. The way I created my schedule for 7th grade this year was if you're in a specific homeroom, the next door class will be your next class, and then across the hall, then next door to that class, and back across the hall to your homeroom teacher where you'll end the day. That's the way I had it set up. So that one, the reason why I did that is to cut down on congestion in the hallway, less movement in the hallway as far as transitioning, no clutter. Teachers know how to, should be easier for teachers to manage classroom expectations with scholars in those rooms. Of course, you might have some conflict in there, but of course, that's why you have schedule constraints in your student information system, so that way you can set up where students won't be scheduled together. Now, some things might not be helped, especially for those students, but both those students have a need for math remediation. They might need to take Read 180, Core System 44, that deals with phonetic awareness and phonetic deficiencies. Read 180 is a comprehension issue. So those are some areas of of need, of course. We'll get down the line on that. But semester two, as far as what I'm looking at now, is how can I drop that number even lower from students failing? Well, I'm looking at four more classes without a remediation class. How can I lower that now? We're also looking at promotion, placement, and retention. That's another thing you should be looking at, students that want to be promoted students that might be placed students that should be retained. Each county might have a different policy as far as what it entails for students to be retained or placed or promoted. Make sure you are aware of those policies so that way we're not basically pushing students to the next grade. But some studies and research has shown that retaining students does not help. Pushing students don't help either, which sounds like remediation in System 44. But how are we closing these gaps with students if they are struggling phonetically and they're not showing any growth or any improvement in the area? We can't put every student in special ed programs. We can't keep every kid on System 44 because that locks us into only having a certain amount of students in there. State of Georgia, 25% of your student population can be in the REP class unless you meet a threshold for free or reduced lunch, which you could bump up 35%. But here's the caveat to that. Unless you're a Title I school where you get more resources and more funding for teachers and that sort of stuff, but then you're looking at space and availability of location for these students, you have to hire paraprofessionals in those classes, which means you would have to have an extra para to go in those specific classes that have over 20 students. Now, in those remediation classes, the max you should have should be 7 students per station, so 21 students. Some district might have 20, some might say 18. But if you have over, we'll say 20 students, you will need a para to go in that class. So that way it'd be easier to handle classroom management. Now, am I saying all the students that have struggle in math or struggle in reading or phonetic awareness, are they trouble issues? Not necessarily, but more than likely. Which brings us to number 3 for semester 2. The weather's heating up. Kids are getting tired of middle school. It's adult days of the semester. We're getting to testing season. We're on winter break now. We have one more break, which will be spring break, which will be in April, which means it's a race to the last 2 months of the year. How can school counselors help with classroom management and management with students and behaviors? I know for one thing, we shouldn't be holding classes. I know the second thing, we shouldn't be in the hallways. We shouldn't be doing lunch duty, but some buildings are different. If we're supervising student behavior in a common area, that is a non-counseling task per ASCA. Now, we can use that as a resource to see our students just to get put eyes on them and do a daily check-in just to see how they're doing, see if something's going on. But at the same time, we see kids not acting in a scholarly manner, we want to redirect. But at the same time, that's where our teachers come in at. We need to make sure our classrooms have our teachers there at the door. We need to make sure that teachers have some type of check-in with students on a daily basis, even as a weekly, which goes to positive behavior, interventions, and support for PBIS. You can also do mindset training. You can also do SEL training, Leader in Me. There have been varying thoughts on PBIS as far as should it be used. Is this just a compliance piece for schools? Does it actually work? Depends on how it's used and if it's done with fidelity and you have the right people in place to run it. My previous district, Bibb County, I was a PBIS coach for 4 years. I was the PBIS coach my first year because the previous council was tired of doing it. and they want me to do it. I had to learn every job of PBIS so that way I have a better understanding of how each role should go. That's my training from when I was in retail management, especially when I was at Walgreens. Little background, when I was at Walgreens, of course, if you're going to be a manager of a Walgreens, you had to know how to run our register. You had to know how to run the photo lab, run the cosmetics, type in a prescription in the pharmacy, how to fill a prescription in the pharmacy, how to enter a prescription in the pharmacy. You had to know how to order. You know how to stock shelves. You had to know how to do resets and revisions. You know how to make sure the store is clean. You had to know every role in that building to make sure you are an effective leader. And I feel that with that experience I had in management, as far as being in retail management, you had to have a specific drive into being a leader of a large staff. Now, of course, being a counselor, it's a specified position, but we are intertwined with every major stakeholder in a building or a district. I know I was talking about semester two, but this is veering into the leadership of the counseling position, which will probably be my next podcast. But you know what? Let's table that for right now. But in fact, no. Pause. If we go ahead and look at it, not just a brief little take into it. If you're a school counselor, you are intertwined with the teachers, the students, administration, mental health, media specialist, SRO, social worker, graduation coach, custodial staff, nutrition staff, board members, district coordinators. Just pick a district coordinator. It could be a PBIS coordinator, or it could be your counseling director, counselors, supervisors, student support specialist, special education. We're intertwined in all of those divisions where we have to collaborate with each one of those stakeholders to make sure we are vying for student success across the board. I will get into that in my next podcast. I got something there. But we haven't tipped the iceberg of master scheduling. I always talk about master scheduling every year. I'm not really going to talk about it right now because that's going to be for a later podcast. But just looking at the things I want to do for semester two, I want to make sure I lower my numbers for student success or failing four more classes without an REP class. I want to make sure my students are ready for A grade, and my upcoming seventh graders, they're ready to go, and make sure I figure out what teachers are coming back or not coming back, and collaborate with administrators as far as how to construct balanced teams for next year. And of course, make sure my professional growth is occurring, making sure that I'm improving in areas of deficit that I may or may not have. I want to accelerate my areas of expertise, and I want to remediate my areas of growth. That's the way I've always been as a counselor. I want to make sure that I am doing well in everything that I can do, and I want somebody to tell me what I need to improve on so that way I can be the best counselor possible for my students at my school. So those are my takeaways from going forward in semester two. Like I said, I went on a little bit about the counselor as a leader in the building, and that could be a presentation right there, so I might work on that. Hope nobody takes my idea. I'll be right back. My housekeeping right after this. Of course, this is the part of the show where we do our housekeeping items. Of course, you can follow me on the Twitter at FaveThePSC. You can follow me on Facebook at Council Connection with Fabian Vix. You can follow me on Spotify, Anchor, Breaker, Pocket Cast, Overcast, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast from. I'm thinking about doing live shows once a week. I'm really thinking about doing a live show or record it and then put the content out. I really think about it. Not sure, but I'm gonna see how my mind works around that. It might be something I might do on Sundays and just post the show on my YouTube and my Twitter. It'd be pretty cool if I do it, but let me know in the comments or the Q&A section. Oh, we also have a button on the Anchor page, anchor.fm/Fabian-Vix. If you click on that, that'll take you to my page on Spotify. Of course, Anchor switched over to Spotify for Podcasters. If you click on the button for leave a message, I will answer your message. I will answer as quickly as I can. If you leave one, I'm going to answer it. Duh. Of course, there's other things working on. I'm trying to get the National School Counselor Year on my podcast. Good friend of mine, I know her for 5 years. We met at GSEA in Augusta. Diana Virgil, I will hopefully reach out to her within the next couple weeks. I will see what we can do about that. Any counselor that want to come on and talk about their year, new counselors especially, we want new counselors to come on there and talk about their first year. I'm trying to do a follow-up series for counselor I interviewed a couple years ago. They have not, I have dropped the ball a little bit because life, especially when I interviewed them a couple years ago. I think it was 2021 when I interviewed them, or was it 2022? I think it was 2021. My mom had passed later in the semester and I just been out of it. And you know, the story of that over the last couple years, how I, dealt with that. And I will talk about that in a later podcast. It's been almost going on 2.5 to 3 years for that, and I will talk about that. That's the gist of my housekeeping. We'll be right back with my final thoughts. Fabe's final thought. As I sit here recording this episode and trying to figure out what I'm going to do this episode on, during the break, on Christmas break, I think the whole world was treated to YouTube Gold on January the 3rd. I believe it was January 3rd. Cat Williams and Shannon Sharp. I did not expect to get what we got. To preface this, that was a 2-hour and 46-minute interview. It took me, it took me every bit of 11 hours to watch down that whole interview because I was taking breaks, going to the store, watching other TV shows. I had to take it in 30-minute increments. I had to record another podcast, my Fort Valley Boys podcast that night. It took 11 hours for me to watch the interview because he had a bunch of things going on in that interview. And no matter how you feel about Cat Williams or Shannon Sharp, let me put some disclaimers out there also first. If you watch Club Shay Shay or watch Nightcap with Shannon Sharp and Chad Johnson, that is TV gold. Those guys click so easily and they work together so well. And we're looking at, now going back to Club Shay Shay, he says from the start, he is a conversationalist. He is not an in-depth interviewer like Mike Bradley or Lester Holt, David Muir, Bryant Gumbel. That's not his space. His space is to have a drink and a conversation and let the interview go where it go. He tells you that from the start. A lot of people on TikTok or X or whatever you want to use as a social media platform, everybody has something to say about he should have asked this follow-up or he should have guided the interview this way. I understand where you come from on that, but if I'm doing an interview I'm a conversationalist, and I get somebody that's already on level 10 30 minutes before the interview starts. Because remember, they're in California when the film is. The interview is live at 12 o'clock Eastern time, which means at 8:30 in the morning, interview starts at 9. Cat Williams was already on one from the reel. I feel like Shannon did the right thing. Could he have asked some different questions to get into a different, to move it along or follow up or whatever, what have you? Do some more digging or more probing. I think the interview would have went differently, and you probably lost 30 to 40 minutes on the interview at minimum. I think, by the way, Shannon did the conversation. Let's go ahead and use that word, conversation, and how he interacted with Kat and let him tell his truth, as our kids say, I want to tell my truth, or my side, or whatnot. You wouldn't have gotten the rawness or the true feeling of how Cat Williams perceive a lot of things in Hollywood. Now, some of the stuff is a little far-fetched. But when you put together the clips and the timelines that Cat gives you, a lot of it makes sense. You have, for instance, we'll start with Mark Curry. Mark Curry tells a joke in 98, 97 about Halloween, and Steve Harvey does that same joke in 2015 on his talk show. Cat Williams does the joke about the parallel parking. Cedric Entertainment does that same joke 2 years later on Kings of Comedy. And only thing is, he changed to a spaceship. The spaceship or Deuce and a Quarter. If I'm rapping, it was a Deuce and a Quarter on Kings of Comedy. He also talks about how Bernie Mac was treated by Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey tried to call the directors of Ocean's 11 to get Bernie Mac put off that movie so he could take that role. It's wild how that was done. But my point being on this part of the interview, on this final thought, is how does this apply to school counselors? How does it apply to us? For school counselors, we want to make sure that we have a conversation with students. We don't do an interview. We don't investigate. We have a conversation. We let the student or the parent tell us their side of their truth. We want to make sure that we get all of their side. We build their trust and make sure that we're available for them in whatever time of need that they have. We want to make sure that everything that's going on with them, they air out their grievances or their problems, so that way we can both collaborate and come up with a solution for everybody to make sure that everybody is well taken care of and safe. That's what Shannon Sharpe does on his show. He even said when he was with the Broncos, when they used to come in his room, they would call Club Shay Shay, play cards, shoot dice, have a good time in there. And that's what he does for the show. He is not doesn't have a degree in journalism, I believe. That's not his forte. He is a conversationalist. He's a great conversationalist to open, have his guests open up. And that's the same thing for school counselors. We need to make sure that we set the table for our students, our parents, even our staff, because our staff comes to us sometimes with things that they're dealing with, or their stress or burnout, or dealing with a troublesome parent or whatnot. We got to make sure that our environment is safe and set for a conversation. And I'm imploring all counselors to make sure that when we're talking to students or parents, administrators, faculty, staff, that our offices or our setting that we're talking to them in is set for a conversation, not for a redirect, for a conversation to hear their side and make sure that we are giving our best effort to them. That is our show for today. I want to thank you for listening. We're back and better than ever. I'll holla. Sense.
hopped out the Benz like it's common sense. Got a monkey on my feet like it's common sense. Got gorillas in the streets like it's common sense. Stack the money heads up like it's second nature. Got a stay pulled up like it's second nature. Keep a chip in my hair like it's second nature. Big wonder make me set like second nature.